The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Wisconsin Badgers podcast joins you on the first day of March, and even though the weather is still not awesome in the state of Wisconsin, it is March Madness. The season is upon us. The Wisconsin Badgers, if you're in the Marquette Golden Eagles, they are also staring down an NCAA tournament berth, and there's a lot of fun stuff to get to on the college basketball front, but also the college football front. Some news from the Wisconsin Badgers this week, and we're going to talk about it here. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Badgers podcast. I'm going to be joined by Jeff Patricus, Badgers beat reporter, in just one moment. But first, got to tell you that if you like what we do here on the podcast, you should definitely subscribe to us, first of all. We're going to have updates throughout the month of March as we obviously follow what's going on in the NCAA tournament and elsewhere. You can also leave a rating or review in Apple Podcasts. That's the best way to help us reach more people and help us get our name out there a little bit. You can also find us on Spotify or Stitcher. Let me know what you think on Twitter, too. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. That's J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. And let us know what you think. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, first time that we've really tried to have episodes on a semi-regular basis, and we'll certainly look to be expanding this as we go forward. But this is a good time to be talking about the Wisconsin Badgers. News broke that Alex Hornibrook, quarterback of the football team, was entering the transfer portal, and looking to play his final season of college football elsewhere. He'll be graduating from Wisconsin and should be, in theory, eligible to play right away in the 2019 season. So, obviously, that was a big story for us in the middle of the week, and wanted to talk to Jeff about that, what he saw as the rationale for that, and what comes next for Alex Hornibrook, and, of course, what comes next for the Badgers football team. The NFL Combine going on this week, so we touched a little bit on that, and the several Badgers players who are involved there, a lot of offensive linemen, Bo Benchwal, Michael Dieter, David Edwards, as well as TJ Edwards out there. So that'll be that's something that we chatted about here. Then, of course, the basketball team with a big game coming up against Penn State on Saturday at the Kohl Center. Three games remaining in the regular season, and the Badgers are trying to secure a top four finish in the Big Ten and earn that elusive double bye for the Big Ten tournament, which would enable them to play beginning on Friday, the third day of the Big Ten tournament, in Chicago at the United Center, and they are in contention for that. They can secure it, but they're going to have to play well down the stretch. Had a very good chance to grab a win in Indiana at Assembly Hall and fell in double overtime on Wednesday night. So still, on Tuesday night, I should say, kind of a bummer situation for the Badgers. Really could have been in the driver's seat for that top four spot had they won that game, but still something that they can grab a hold of. That will start against a improved Penn State team on Saturday, followed by games to close the year against Iowa and Ohio State. Without further ado, let's get to Jeff Patricus. Here now is Jeff Patricus, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter, covering the Wisconsin Badgers, covering both the basketball and football teams. And while we'll obviously talk about the basketball team as they prepare for the home stretch of the 2019 regular season, we're going to start with football. Big news coming down middle of the week that quarterback Alex Hornibrook has entered the transfer portal and will be seeking to play his final year of college football somewhere other than Wisconsin. This is news that caught me by surprise. I don't exactly know, Jeff, how you feel about it, but you know, there have been the concussion injuries, and there's obviously been the buzz about, you know, Graham Mertz or just in general other quarterbacks in the program. But you know, Alex Hornibrook, it seemed like the role was his if he was healthy next year. And furthermore, if it was just injury-related, you wouldn't think he'd be looking to play football at all next year. So is it a combination of him being concerned about his role or the injuries? Is it another factor we haven't considered? Or is it something we just, you know, may never know because both sides aren't gonna share a lot of information about this?
Well, it's like most things. There are several layers to it. It's not just one thing. As we reported in our story, I was told that even after the bowl game was over, the Pinstripe Bowl, he didn't play in it because he wasn't cleared to play. There were still some, he was experiencing lingering issues from the concussions. And it's interesting because Wisconsin just played Indiana in hoops, and Rice Thompson for Indiana has recently returned to play from a concussion he suffered in November that limited him, I think, to just the first two games of the season. So you do not know how people are going to respond to these things. And people always ask me about Hornibrook in the spring, and I said, you know what? First of all, I don't know if he's going to be available in the spring. We don't know if he's going to be healthy. I said, you don't know if he's going to be available in camp. I said, when they asked him about the quarterback race, I said, who knows if he's ever going to play again? Now, he said he wants to try to play again in his Instagram post, but once he gets his degree, it's going to depend probably mostly on his health. And to me, that's still to be determined because you never know whether he's going to be fully healthy and able to play again. As far as the buzz, I know I made a comment, I think it was on radio the other day. I said, you know, I can see how he might want a fresh start. And people asked me, well, what do you mean by fresh start? And I said, well, if you pay attention to a lot of vocal people who sit in the stands, they think he's not worthy of a scholarship. They think he's the worst quarterback ever to put on a Wisconsin uniform. Neither one is a legitimate point, but he's aware of that. And also, he's had a lot of people telling him, you shouldn't play again. You're an idiot if you play again. Why would you want to play again? Why would you want to risk your health? Probably wouldn't face those issues if he goes to a different place.
Yeah, and if you look at his numbers, I was actually kind of stunned how great they really are. And I'd be curious what you think the legacy of Alex Hornibrook will be in the Badgers program. 26-6, 8-13 winning percentage is the best of any Wisconsin quarterback in program history. You know, he's top five all time in things like touchdown passes, completion percentage, yards. I mean, he's on paper, he's the complete package, and he was a lightning rod for a number of reasons, but he really was valuable. How do you think we'll remember him? Maybe it's shaped by what comes next, but what impact does he leave at Wisconsin?
Well, first of all, he was a lightning rod for two reasons. One, he wasn't Russell Wilson, and two, he threw too many interceptions. And he acknowledged this. The coaching staff acknowledged this. That was his biggest bugaboo, and most of them were related to decision-making, not arm strength. He'll be remembered by people who understand football and know the program as a solid quarterback who had some really good games, but whose ceiling was too often limited by mistakes. And those would be the interceptions. But, I mean, you know, his last big game, I shouldn't say last big game, but the cap in the two seasons ago when he was the MVP in the Orange Bowl was probably his best overall game in Wisconsin. It was one of the highlights of the program because they won a major bowl game. They kept their bowl streak intact, and they recorded their 13th victory for the first time in program history. So he'll always have that on his resume at Wisconsin. But as I said, you can't, if you evaluate him fully, the interceptions would be the biggest blemish on his resume. And, you know, where he's going to go, I'll really be curious to see if he does find a landing spot, and I'll be curious to see if he does play football. Because once he has his degree in May in real estate, he's going to be in pretty good shape.
For sure. Yeah, there's going to be a temptation to reduce this to a binary between Jack Cohen and Graham Mertz, who, again, is a very popular young man. He enrolled early and is already at Wisconsin, very highly touted freshman quarterback. Jack Cohen, however, started four games last year, saw a lot of playing time, and, you know, is basically the incumbent now with Hornibrook going elsewhere. Should we discount that Danny Vandenboom and Chase Wolf could get into this quarterback competition? Do you see it as a true four-way race, or is it a three-way race, or is it really, you know, is it Jack Cohn's job to lose? I mean, how do you look at the quarterbacking job going forward?
Well, I can't speak to Chase Wolf because he ran the scout team last year, basically. So that's, who knows? I mean, I don't even know if the coaching staff has a really good handle, because when you're on the scout team, you're not running the Wisconsin offense. You're running the other team's offense, which can change from week to week, obviously. So anybody who's been on a scout team knows that once they're off the scout team and trying to get in the mix for playing time, it's a complete change. So I know they really like Vandenboom. They kept him at quarterback, could have put him at safety when he got here. He's got skills. He's a really sharp kid. I would not discount him, even though he played basically just really limited snaps in three games. I'm curious to see once they start spring ball on March 26th, what Jack Cohn looks like, not only physically, but, you know, when you're a backup, we've seen this time and time again in football. When you're a backup, you can say, hey, I pushed myself, I prepare to be the starter, et cetera, et cetera. But if in your mind you think, look, the only way I'm going to play is the guy in front of me. You don't always push yourself as much as you think you can. Now with Alex Hornibrook gone, I'm curious to see if the effect for Cohn is, hey, this is my job to lose, and I'm not giving it up. I don't care about the hotshot freshman or anybody else behind me. And I'll reserve judgment on Graham Mertz. I know they like him, but I'll reserve judgment until I actually see him throw a pass in practice in a Wisconsin uniform.
Before we move on to the basketball part of things, the NFL Combine is this week. There are several Badgers taking part. Curious just your thoughts on which of the players participating you think will be maybe the highest draft pick, or maybe not even about the draft, but just the best pro. You know, Michael Dieter is there, TJ Edwards, David Edwards, Bo Benschwall, all taking part. Certainly all four of those guys figure to get drafted. Who's the guy that you think that you saw that you really believe is going to have a pretty substantial NFL career?
The NFL likes mobile guards, and both Benschall and Dieter can move pretty well. I'm not sure about David Edwards at tackle. He had a really good season 2 years ago. Last year he was banged up, and I know when I talked to him in New York about the decision to stay or go, he was confident that he had put enough good stuff on tape the previous season that would not really hurt his draft status. I know when he was healthy, he looked like he could be a really solid tackle. But I'm kind of leaning towards the two guards because NFL really likes guys who can move at the guard spot. And the one thing about Dieter is, God, the guy played three different positions. He played center, he played guard, he played tackle as a fill-in that 1 year. He's smart enough to do it. So I'm really curious to see how those two guys pan out. I hope Edwards is healthy, and I hope that gives him a shot. But we'll see. And like a guy like TJ Edwards, I'm curious because the NFL, when he was thinking about coming out 2 seasons ago, they questioned his speed, his ability to stay on the field every down. I'm guessing they'll still have those same questions now when they talk to him at the combine. But the guy's a smart football player. But I'm really curious to see how those offensive linemen pan out.
The Badger basketball team taking on Penn State on Saturday. That's the first of their three final games of the regular season. Badgers in kind of crunch time, looking to solidify their standing in the Big Ten tournament. Sure seems like the NCAA tournament is pretty much a lock at this point. They're coming off this loss against Indiana, this double overtime loss, and I think the Hoosiers are kind of one of the more fascinating teams in the Big Ten because they've played terribly, but they have a lottery pick in Romeo Langford, or a potential lottery pick, and they have these high-profile wins over teams like Marquette, Michigan State, Louisville, and now Wisconsin. You know, the Badgers obviously had chances, missed free throws, a lot of struggles late in that game where they could have maybe pulled ahead, but when you walked out of Assembly Hall, did you feel like the Badgers kind of... that they choked away an opportunity, that they really should have won that game? Or was that just a hard-fought loss? I mean, Indiana did play pretty well.
Well, Indiana had been playing well for quite some time. I mean, they took – should have beat Iowa in overtime if they made their free throws on the road. They should have beat Purdue at home. They lost by two. They could have beat Iowa at home. They beat Michigan State in East Lansing. So they had turned a corner in terms of finally showing – that they could play in similar fashion as it did early in the year when they were 12-2 and 3-0 in the league. I'm not surprised they lost there because Wisconsin has not been efficient on offense of late, and you knew that might be a problem. And if you look at the second overtime, why they lost, they didn't hit a field goal attempt, and they were only 5-11 from the free throw line. They hit 8-11 from the free throw line, and they win the game. They could have won the game in regulation if they would have made some free throws. So, yeah. They missed an opportunity, but I think it's safe to say that they're in pretty good shape in the NCAA since they've been projected as a number four seeded team. So I don't think that they're in danger of not making the field. The big thing for the Big Tens, by the end of the weekend, they could be in sole possession of the fourth spot and get the double bye because you've got, if you beat Penn State on Saturday, you tie Maryland, and then on Sunday, Maryland hosts Michigan. So you could be a half game up on Maryland heading into the final week battling for that fourth spot.
Yeah, the Badgers really want to see Michigan take care of Maryland there. Michigan, with the Badgers having a win over them, that helps them in the tiebreaker situation as well. What do you think the double bye means? Because certainly I think everybody wants to see the Badgers get that opportunity where they don't have to play a game, you know, on Thursday of the Big Ten tournament and go right to Friday. But it seems like the Big Ten tournament doesn't dramatically alter where teams ultimately wind up getting seeded. We've seen that year after year where the teams in the semis and finals, you think that might adjust their seed, and it doesn't really. How big of a deal do you think the Badgers consider that double bye? How big of a deal do you think it is?
Well, They're going to be going into the Big Ten tournament hoping to win a championship. And anytime in you go into a tournament like that, you'd prefer to have to play the smaller, fewer games as possible. You don't want to have to, you know, make a lengthy run. And then especially if you make a lengthy run, if you have a turnaround and play the early first round game in the NC2A, you don't want that to happen. So as far as whether that double bye helps, I've seen it work both ways. Sometimes you get a team that plays just that, you know, has a single bye, gets that first game under its belt, and is sharper, especially early in the game, than the team that has the double bye. But when you want to win a tournament championship, you want the double bye. You want to be fresh. You want to, you know, if you win that game, all of a sudden you're in the semis. And then if you win that, boom, you're in the final. You only play three games in 3 days. That would be the best case scenario for any team. So we'll see. They're in good position to do it because I would not be at all surprised for Michigan to win at Maryland because Michigan needs that game because they're still in the running for a league title.
Certainly one of the things that many have focused on is the free throw shooting, particularly Ethan Happ's free throw shooting. Just a fascinating case study of a player who is unquestionably the best player on the team. He's attempted almost twice as many free throws as the next guy on the team, and yet he makes less than 50% of them. I know that there isn't really a solution here. It's just stay the course and you know, work through it. But obviously, it's getting to the point late in the season where Ethan Happ is not going to even get to 50% for the year. Have you seen cases where the coaching staff or the players are working around that in some ways, or maybe floating the idea of sitting him in certain possessions late in games or try to keep the ball away from him? I mean, what adjustments have they tried to make to work around that free throw shooting? If anything, maybe there's just nothing they can do.
Well, there was one game 2 years ago where they went offense for defense. That was in an overtime victory at Nebraska. He was pulled the other game. I think it was the Illinois game, the home game. But that was with, I want to say, 4:06 left. But he was pulled after an egregious turnover. And after the turnover, he didn't hustle back on defense immediately. And guard had seen enough. Now, it's possible that guard said, it's a close game. We've got the lead. I don't need to bring Ethan back in, but there's only one time where I can remember a guard said, you know what, we need to get him out on offense because of the turnovers, because he said repeatedly, and he's right, is that despite the free throw issue, he does so many things well that they need him on the court late in game. Now, Ethan's smart enough to know that there've been a couple times where he's grabbed the defensive rebound late in games, and he has gotten it out of his hands to a teammate. I think both times it was Trice, as quickly as possible, so he wouldn't get fouled with the ball. So Ethan is aware of it. And then obviously, if you think back to the Michigan game here, Michigan tried to foul him, but it was away from the ball and turned out to be a flagrant because John Beilein wasn't aware of the rule change. So you know, they're gonna stay the course. They've gotten him to a point long ago at practice where he was hitting a high percentage of free throws. It's up to him to try to translate that from practice to the game. And for the most part, he can't do it. Now, he's better on the road than he is at home. So I'll really be curious to see how he is in postseason beginning in Chicago.
I know we talked about Khalil Iverson on the podcast last time we chatted, but even since then, it seems like he's taken a big turn for the better. We've seen him take a big jump forward. What is it that we're seeing with him? I mean, is this the most confident he's ever played?
Well, it still goes back to matchups. If you look at the two games, Illinois Northwestern both played small lineups, and Illinois really pressures you and likes to attack you. And he has traditionally handled that pressure well and take advantage of the overplays. And he's been very active. And he's always been active on the glass, and he's always been he's been particularly a good on-ball defender in the last two seasons. He was always a good help defender. But he played really good defense against Indiana, and he was active inside against Indiana. So against certain teams, if the matchups don't favor, if they have a really big lineup, he will struggle sometimes trying to finish over length inside. But that wasn't a problem against Northwestern. That wasn't a problem against Illinois. And for the most part, it wasn't a problem against Indiana.
What What is your thought of what comes after Ethan Happ and Trice? You know, Davison had two strong games in the wins that the Badgers have had recently, but then had a couple rough shooting performances bookending that, including against Indiana. Nate Reavers has struggled from time to time lately. Aleem Ford isn't really seeing the floor. I think everybody's still waiting on Kobe King a little bit. You'd written about Brevin Pritzel and how he's emerged as kind of the Badgers' top bench guy. But who hits the big shots, if not Ethan Happ and possibly Dimitrik Trice, as we get into the postseason? Who is the third guy that really has to step up and be, you know, be that option?
Davison. I mean, he's been, even though he struggled shooting, you know, he's not afraid to take the big shots. If you think back to the Maryland game that they lost in at Maryland, he was having a bad shooting night that night. Yet they ran a play for him out of an out of bounds play, because they had called a timeout with about, I want to say, 6 seconds left on the shot clock. And they ran, I want to say, basically the same set against Indiana in overtime. He comes hard, like he's going around a screen towards the basket. He bounces right back out to the corner. They ran it against Maryland. He got a shot from Trice in the corner, buried it to give him that lead after they were down by 21. They ran a similar set, if not the identical set, at Indiana, and the ball went in, spun around, and popped out. Otherwise, they would have had the lead. So they're not afraid to have him take the shot because they know that he is not going to shy away from it. Some of the, I'll use Ford and King as an example. Now, Kobe had a couple nice assertive plays where he attacked the basket and hit shots against Indiana. But the issue with Kobe still, for whatever reason, is you'll see that in one stretch or one game, and you won't see the assertiveness the next game. So when a coach sees that, you know, it's a tough situation. Do I give him the time? Do I have him working through it? Or do I put him on the bench because I know Brad, even though he may not have a good shooting day, at least will be aggressive? You're generally going to go with the guy who's aggressive and wants the ball and is willing to take the shot. And that's not a question for Brad.
Badgers have lost 3 of 5 after winning 6 straight, but they do have a couple home games here toward the end of the season and should realistically be able to, you know, at least stay in these final 3 games against Penn State, Iowa, and Ohio State, if not win them. And again, as we mentioned, get a top 4 spot in the Big Ten tournament. This could be applied to the Big Ten or the NCAA tournament, but if this team has an early exit, I'm curious what you think would be their biggest bugaboo. And on the flip side to that, if this team does make the second weekend of the NCAA tournament or go deep into the postseason, what you think it is that really will take them there? What's the one thing that the Badgers have that maybe other teams can't really account for?
Well, they're still generally a solid defensive team, and that's going to help you. I mean, they've got versatile defenders. They've got their bigs who can switch out and for the most part stay in front of guys. So your defense is going to keep you in most games. We've seen that during the regular season time after time, even if their offense has faltered. And the key, though, will be, if you have your first-round NCAA game, if you have a scoring drought, which a lot of teams do have scoring droughts in the tournament, is it a short one? Can you negate it by getting to the free-throw line if you're not hitting field goal attempts? And if you do get to the line, do you hit the shots? Or if you're fouled on a drive, do you complete the basket and make it an and-one as opposed to missing the shot and only hitting 1 of 2 free throws? So their offense has to be more consistent, but their defense for the most part has been solid, and their ball handling, they've been taking care of the ball for the most part. So those things will give them a chance. And I've said this before, and I'll be really curious to see how it pans out, but the Big Ten, when you look at what Penn State did, it's beaten Michigan and Maryland now in its 5-2 stretch. But Penn State was struggling early. I mean, the Penn State team that Wisconsin beat in January in State College, that team doesn't even exist anymore. This Penn State team is playing really well. Indiana is playing hard again, and people forget, Indiana blew the doors off of Marquette, which is probably going to win the Big East. What does that tell you about the strength of the two leagues? It's not even close, because Indiana is going to probably be playing on the first day of the Big Ten tournament. So the thing is, when Big Ten teams get out of league play, I'm really curious to see if what they've gone through every night this year, does it have a deleterious effect and they're worn down, or to the fact that they're not playing Big Ten teams anymore and the scouting isn't as good and teams don't have as much time to prepare and they don't know the personnel as well, if you see a lot of teams from the Big Ten advance and stay alive.
He is Jeff Patricus, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Wisconsin Badgers. Find all of his content at jsonline.com. He'll get you covered as the football team has developments like they did last week, but especially this basketball team heading into the final stretch of the 2018-2019 season. Thank you, Jeff. We'll chat with you again as we get into the Big Ten tournament.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Find my resume report at jsonline.com. In addition to all of Jeff's stories about the Badgers, my resume report looks at Marquette and Wisconsin, as well as the Marquette women, where they stand, where projections have them seated for the upcoming NCAA tournament. Marquette women are trying to host the tournament for the first time in program history. They're kind of right on the brink, on the edge of doing that right now. Their most recent bracketology by ESPN sees them as a 4 seed that would enable them to host the first two rounds of play that first weekend of the NCAA tournament. But if they dip to a 5, it won't be the case. So Marquette kind of looking to solidify that standing. They did win at least a share of the Big East title, and we'll be looking to win that outright with their games this weekend, both road tests to close the Big East regular season for the women. The men, of course, are also a game up in the Big East standings, looking to secure the Big East title outright. That's going to require some good play down the stretch. They've got 2 big games remaining against Creighton and Georgetown, so they are in the driver's seat right now, but they're going to have to finish strong and hold off Villanova, a team that got the best of them narrowly this week. So the Golden Eagles looking for that title on both the men's and women's side, and of course the Badgers won't win a Big Ten title, but they can still make some serious noise. This is a team that's about to go back to the NCAA tournament after a rare year off last year, and I know a lot of people are excited to see what comes next. Again, thanks to Jeff Patricus. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Come find us. Check out the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We'll be talking spring training here in the next few weeks. Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast comes at you every week. The Bucks win every single game. It's always fun to chat about the Bucks as well. The Packers podcast, find all of it at jsonline.com if you can't find it at one of those podcast locations. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll chat with you very soon.